This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, reverse discrimination alleged at Southern Illinois University, and the IRS cracks down after an anti-war sermon. Joining us from member station WBUR in Boston, Glenn Lowry, professor of economics at Brown University. Also with us from Maryland, George Curry. He's the editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. And joining us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Yvonne Bynoe, author of Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture. I understand Yvonne couldn't hear the exchange between the two congresspeople, but that George and Glenn could. Let me start with that before we go much further. Glenn Lowry, when we hear numbers bantied about, as we just did, and the idea of one congressman on one side of the political fence suggesting that money is going one place, the other suggesting it's not going in that place, it's going elsewhere. Isn't this exactly what the American public is tired of?
Well, the issue is complicated. Sure, the American public is tired of crossfire-style political debate. They want substance and they want their problems solved. But the issue is complicated. From my point of view as an economist observing this administration over the last few years, the tax policy has been heavily tilted toward the rich. The social policy in general has done nothing with the idea of compassionate conservatism. There is this drug benefit that has been legislated for the elderly, but it's breaking the bank. The government's running huge deficits. It's another replay of the Reagan-style move where you put the government in fiscal trouble and it has no wiggle room to do anything socially productive. So, I mean, I'm, you know, trying not to be too partisan about it, but I think the Democrats have by far the better of this particular debate.
George, when you listen to that beyond the numbers again, it becomes a question of whether or not the American public will soon grow totally weary of the idea of not being able to know, whether it be numbers or anything else that may be debated on Capitol Hill, who to believe.
I think people, that would be a mistake. I mean, I think the American public does understand. They understand, for example, that these cuts, for the most part, are subsidizing the wealthy and that people on the other end, poor and middle class, are being crunched. They understand this. I think politicians make a grave mistake to underestimate the public understanding this. And they know that we can't afford it. They see what the deficits are, that we just simply cannot afford it. But this administration wants to go headlong, regardless of what other economic factors are, that we're going to keep this tax cut for the wealthy in place, and poor people will just have to cut more of your programs. That's clear, and people do understand that.
But also, too, Ed, I did actually hear the exchange, and what I found a little chilling was the idea that this young man should not have the opportunity to go to Georgetown, the Cadillac of universities, as he indicated. Are we either going to not invest in education? We seem to be behind the curve in so many places, education being one of the key places, so why should he have to go to a What's the Matter U or some other lower-end university? I don't think it's so much about a working-class person subsidizing someone who opts or is admitted to an elite university. I think it's about our priorities, and I think, as was just said, we talk about this compassionate conservatism, we talk about the importance of education, but really when the rubber meets the road, we see another situation going on, and these budget cuts are just indicative of that.
And I think another point is you understand that, you know, people should get a chance to go whatever school that their intellect takes them. If you're going to say that only people who are poor can go to schools that are not elite, then you want the richest in the country can only go to the elite university and everybody else gets co-signed to everything else. No, that's the whole purpose of having aid and assistance, so that people can go wherever they want to go.
And that's the whole point of a society based on merit and not based on money. And again, we hear the Republican rhetoric talking about that. But again, here in a practical sense, now they're singing a different tune.
Glenn Lowry, you've taught at some of those elite universities, if you will. When you heard that from the congressman, what was your thought?
Well, there is an issue here of how much is going to be grant and how much is going to be loan for any given total amount of aid that goes to someone wanting to go to college. My thought was that if a young man is smart enough to get himself into Georgetown, it's a darn pity if he can't go there because he doesn't have the money. But that does not mean that we have to simply give him whatever it is, the $25,000 or $30,000 a year. We can also ask him to take some responsibility. I think that much of the sort of conservative side of that debate is fair. We can ask the students to take some responsibility. But my bottom line would be, one way or the other, a youngster with that kind of talent and promise, we must for the
future
of our
country.
But
let's be honest, even if a kid takes on that kind of responsibility in terms of finding a job, he's not going to find a job that's going to subsidize the difference in whatever the family income is going to be and whatever makeup has to be given through aid.
Oh, Ed, that's certainly right. No, I'm not saying that. He needs help. I'm just saying he may actually take some loans as well as getting some grants. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. But that was my understanding. Yeah, I thought that he did indicate that he had work study as well as loans. So I guess the question is, what percentage of a college tuition payment are we expecting or we should expect the government? And I think that's a clearly a debatable point that
that's
has some
point.
Legs.
Yeah.
But I think that as was stated, we should allow people to go as where the intellect does take them. And whether
right.
that's a Cadillac of universities or not, so be it.
Well, the real shame is that education will cost you $30,000-$40,000 a year, no matter where you go, and that can be problematic for almost anyone. All right, we'll take a look at the Bush administration that is suggesting that it may sue Southern Illinois University for discriminating against whites, men, and others. The Justice Department alleges that the fellowship programs that they are engaged in, helping minorities and women, violate federal civil rights laws. The university has sent a letter that charges that the program has a pattern of intentionally discriminating against whites, non-preferred minorities, and males. And the university has until November 18th, just a few short days from now, to stop the program or face a lawsuit. George?
Well, first of all, let's put it in perspective. These are only three fellowships, and 12% of those fellowships went to white. There are many more fellowships that are open to everybody, and as these were, obviously. And the whole idea is to end the underrepresentation. You have less than 8% of blacks and Latinos part of their whole graduate school. So they're trying to do something that increases. And this is the farce in this whole thing. These right-wing groups that brought this complaint, the Center for Equal Opportunity, which is misnamed, basically are using laws that were designed to help people of color and use them, turn them on their heads. So they're using the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, and Title VII, which prohibits discrimination based on race, color, national origin, using these tools that were designed to help people of color and using them to oppress them. And that's the irony in this whole thing.
We should note that the university has suggested that they do not believe these fellowships, in fact, discriminate against anyone. They'll take a look at it. They've declined whether or not they're going to suggest that the university will fight or submit to the decree that was sent down from the Justice Department. Go ahead, pick up, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say this is ideology run amok. The main impact of a lawsuit like this is the chilling effect it exerts on other institutions looking down the road who may be considering initiating programs of this kind to try to expand black and Hispanic presence in their graduate and higher education, but don't want to end up in court. And as if the problem in this country was white people being discriminated against by universities, as if the sort of principle of what the civil rights laws were enacted for, people are always talking about the original intention of the founders. They're invoking the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act in 1964 here, but as if the principle and the vision of the framers of that act was to worry about black people not being able to get ahead because some fellowship program might be preferentially directed to them. And the bottom line on this is just going to be cynicism. Universities are going to say, okay, it's open to everybody, but they're still going to bend and interpret whatever subjective discretion they have in the interest of increasing minority presence, which is a legitimate and indeed a vital national interest. The Supreme Court itself, it says that it's a compelling governmental interest. So this is ideology run amok.
I was in the Supreme Court when they made these arguments, and I was there when the decision came down in the Michigan cases, and whether they recognize it or not, the courts, the jurors decided that it's all right to have affirmative action. Now, what has happened, though, is that some of these right-wing groups, in fact, one of them said specifically, they have contacted hundreds of schools, and the mere threat of litigation has caused them to eliminate these programs. That has already been happening, so they are able to get a victory through threats that they could not achieve through the Supreme Court.
But I also think that on just taking it a slightly different way, I think that money is scarce, is going to continue to get scarcer, as we talked about earlier in terms of these budget cuts. And I think that we're going to have to take a different tact as African Americans about financing education. If there is a possibility that these type of fellowships and grant monies will not be available. So what does that mean? It means that people with means are going to have to set up private monies to see that people are educated. And that's a concept that we talk about, we give a lot of lip service to, but there's plenty of money out there within churches, fraternal organizations, sororities, and all of that. And we're going to have to do a better job by funneling that money to the universities that we feel serve our needs, and be that majority or be that historically black colleges and universities.
All right, continued peeking into the Justice Department, this in the Civil Rights Division. There are allegations by former and current employees, particularly the lawyers within that division, who are suggesting that they're being forced out, pushed out by the Bush administration if they, the lawyers, do not share the administration's views on the civil rights laws. There has been cries of increased litigation in the, quote, non-traditional format for the Civil Rights Division, more of it looking into now human trafficking, prosecution of that nature versus the racial and gender discriminations that have traditionally been handled by this division. Glenn Lowry, how much of this can be looked upon as just the new world we live in versus a political ideology shift?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I think no matter what, the role that civil rights law enforcement plays in the larger picture of dealing with race and racial inequality in the country was bound to decline. It was bound to decline. I think another thing that's going on is that the demography is shifting, so that because of the huge immigration from Latin America and Asia that we are in the midst of, and that's been going on for 30, 35 years, we really have a different picture on the ground when we talk about minority and civil rights. But mostly, I think, that the culture of the lawyers around the Bush administration and the kind of people who are likely to get appointed to positions like this, on the one hand, and the culture of the career employees in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department who have devoted their lives to crusading against discrimination are completely, radically different cultures, and that's what we're seeing here.
We should note that the department spokesman, Eric Holder, noted that the overall attrition rate during the Bush administration, about 13%, is not significantly higher than that of President Clinton's shift, and that was 11% average during
the last
5 years.
Did you say Eric Holder? Did you say Eric Holder?
I'm sorry, Eric Holland.
Okay, all right. I don't think he'd go along with this. I think the important thing here is, sure, you have the shifting of the lawyers, but let's look at the numbers. Prosecutions for the kinds of racial and gender discrimination generally handled by the Civil Rights Division is down by 40% over 5 years. And this shift has been from civil rights, traditionally, as the way we define it, and they're putting more emphasis on immigration matters, so much so that about half of their cases now cover immigration. So you have a fundamental shift. You've always had changes with the political appointments, and regardless of whether the president is Democrat or Republican. But what you have here is the political appointees basically pushing aside the career lawyers who have been traditionally litigating this area, and we see a big drop in it, and that's bad for the country.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you remember when Clinton tried to appoint Lonnie Guinier to the job of Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights? The Wall Street Journal and the conservatives went berserk. They basically lynched her in the press and turned her into a quota queen. Well, something far more radical has been happening, and not just at the Justice Department. Look at the United States Civil Rights Commission, which is in the hand of ideologues who used to work for the Center for Equal Opportunity, which is the one that's bringing these lawsuits against these college fellowship programs. A much more radical shift to the right has happened in the civil rights establishment than anything ever threatened by the appointment of Lonnie Guinier, and it has happened pretty much with the press and commentators having very little to say about it.
But Yvonne, this goes back to a question we raise often during this roundtable, and if we use the Lonnie Guinier example, it seems as though Republicans, conservative Republicans in particular, circle the wagons and they go after what they deem as unfit. We are not seeing Democrats again playing that same game.
Well, you're exactly right, Ed. I think that overall this has been a long term plan where the Republicans have been planning and plotting to get their people into key places. And now that that has happened, they are pushing agendas that they feel are fit their perspective. But that being said, I mean, where are the Democrats in this? Where have they been and where are they going? I think that's a key question in terms of when their time comes up to bat, what are they going to do? How are they going to change the tide? I have no problem with having conversations about, immigration, since that is where we currently are in terms of our demographics. But that does not negate the need for the traditional civil rights litigation. And I don't see where the two are mutually exclusive, but this administration has made the decision that that is not where they want to focus their time and attention, and they have let the thing lapse. The same thing we're talking about these other parts of the government. So I think that we need to be clear, or rather the Democrats need to be clear about how are they going to push back when the time comes. And the public needs to be a little bit more vigilant as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes back to the fundamental thing, who you vote for. So much stems from whether it's a Supreme Court pick to these appointees. We really have to educate the public as well as to what this means when you go cast a ballot or don't cast a ballot for someone.
George, we should note that there have been individual Democrats who are making noise. Members of the CBC, Edward Kennedy comes to mind immediately from the Senate side, and of course Barack Obama in some instances, but there does not seem to be this collective cry that we see so well developed by Republicans.
This underscores a fundamental problem. The conservatives have developed an infrastructure. They have the think tanks. They challenge these things every day, and that has not been matched by the progressives on the left. That simply has not. That's been a problem. I've been talking about it. I wrote about it in my column this week, and I'm going to continue to talk about it because they have not matched that vigor. They simply are outgunned, and that's why we continue to lose these kind of battles.
All right. George, Glenn, Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.